Shall we?
Maybe they led all the way down to the sea. If so, perhaps we could swim round to the next bay quicker than we'd get there on foot. It was worth a look, at least. Plus, there was something about the steps that made me want to follow them. They felt like an invitation. A hidden staircase on the forbidden side of an island. I mean, who could resist that? I nodded. Let's at least check them out, I said, kicking myself even as I said it. 2 minutes earlier, I'd asked myself why I could never resist anything unknown and mysterious, and here I was, seeking out that very thing. Fact was, I couldn't resist, and I didn't want to. The possibility of an adventure would always be more appealing than the urge to stay safe. It's just how I was made, I guess.
Okay, if there's nothing down there, we can always come back up and see if this path leads us back to the road, Aaron said.
I grinned. I hoped you'd say that. He pulled the plants to the side and led the way. The concrete stairs twisted down and down, dotted throughout with branches, bushes, plants and twigs. Part of me was thinking we had an awfully steep climb back up if the steps didn't lead anywhere. The other part just wanted to know where on earth these steps were taking us and who on earth had built them. We had nearly reached the bottom of the cliff. A turn to the left, 3 steps down, a turn to the right, 5 more steps, turn left, then...
Whoa!
Aaron stopped in his tracks. I stopped right behind him.
Wow! I said. What the...
We glanced at each other, then looked back down. Below us, a low wall marked the end of the steps. To the left of the wall, there was a very short, very steep path, leading directly down to some kind of plinth. It looked like a concrete stage. Semicircular in shape, it jutted from the cliff, looking straight out to sea. Below the plinth, the sides dropped off vertically down to the beach. The fifth bay. The one that wasn't labelled on the map. Even from the very edge, it was still too far to jump into the sea. Maybe if the tide was in, we could have done it. But there was no way we could survive a drop like that. It was at least the height of a house, and who knew what rocks might lurk beneath the surface. But it was what was on the stage that took my breath away. A chair. A big, chunky wooden chair, facing out across the ocean to the far horizon. I looked at Aaron. He looked at me. Then, without saying another word, we scurried down the last bit of the path, jumped onto the concrete plinth, and went to examine the chair. It was solid and heavy, and seemed to be rooted to the concrete, almost as if it was part of it. It was made of thick, dark wood, damp and slightly rotting at the base of each leg. Tiny bits of moss were growing up the back, and every slat was nailed together firm and tight.
"What is it?"
I asked as we walked around it.
I mean, I know what it is, obviously. It's a chair. But what is it for?
And who is it for?
Aaron mused.
Look.
He pointed at the seat.
It's more worn than the rest of it.
He was right. The seat was scuffed and pale.
Like someone sits in it regularly.
Exactly. But who? And it's odd that someone comes here regularly when it's so hard to reach.
And supposedly out of bounds, I added.
Aaron walked round to the front and sat in the chair.
Beautiful though, isn't it? Makes me feel like a king.
He sat on the seat, upright and arms folded.
Like Neptune or King Canute or something.
He patted the seat and shuffled to the side.
Join me.
I squeezed in next to him. King Aaron and Queen Emily, I murmured.
What do you think? Reckon we could make a better job of it than Neptune if we were in charge of the oceans.
As soon as the words were out of my mouth, I wanted to take them back. I mean, that was more or less like asking him if he wanted to marry me, wasn't it? Aaron laughed.
I don't know. He does pretty well. When he's not in such a bad mood that he destroys islands or creates violent thunderstorms out at sea.
In other words, no thank you to that idea. And in case I hadn't got the message clearly enough, he turned to stare at me with a really weird look on his face. What? I asked, wondering whether I should try to explain that I hadn't actually just proposed to him, or if that would make it even worse. Aaron shook his head.
Nah, nothing,
he replied lightly. Then he shifted away from me and stared hard out to sea.
Okay, thanks, Aaron. I've got the message loud and clear.
We sat looking out at the sea in silence for a minute. Other than the fact that my face was burning from making a fool of myself, and I'd quite happily have hidden under a rock for a while, I could have stayed there all day. Aaron and me here together, sharing a view of the most beautiful, wide blue sea. It was as if there was no one in the world except us. Nothing at all moved. And then... Aaron, I nudged him.
What?
I held my arm straight out ahead, towards the horizon. The tide was a long way out, but there was still a lot of sea. It wasn't the water I was pointing at, though. It was what was on the water. That! Aaron followed where I was pointing.
A tall ship!
He jumped up out of the seat. I joined him at the edge of the plinth and we stared at the ship. It looked like something out of a film. A long boat, rising up at the front and back. It had three tall masts, with what looked like very straggly white sails hanging loosely from each one. I squinted into the sunlight to stare at it. It was half facing us, half facing towards the edge of the horizon, and gliding across the water so gently it almost seemed to be hovering above it.
"Is it coming to the island, do you think?" I asked.
"It seems to be," Aaron replied. "Must be a couple of miles away at least, though."
"Maybe it's something that Lyle's planned for us."
"That would be so cool."
Aaron turned to me and grinned.
"Although, from what we've seen of his organisational skills so far, I wouldn't bet on it."
"Agreed."
We watched the ship a bit longer. It was mesmerising. One moment, the sails looked torn and useless. The next, they filled with wind, billowing like a proud sergeant major sticking out his chest to fill his lungs with air. Each time it did this, the ship edged forwards. The next moment, the sails would drop, falling back to their lifeless, ragged shape. And then, something really weird happened. A line of mist seemed to grow from behind the ship, starting beyond the horizon and enveloping the boat, as if someone was creeping up behind it to throw a sheet over it and hide it away. The mist crept closer and lower, until it was covering the ship completely. Moments later, the sun came out from behind the mist and started to burn it away. It glared so brightly, I had to close my eyes. When I opened them again, the sea was flat, the air was still, the mist had vanished, and so had the ship. Chapter 5 Aaron looked at me.
"Where's it gone?"
I stared out at the sea, waiting for the ship to come back into sight.
"Maybe it's just dipped behind a wave," I suggested.
"There are no waves. The sea is as flat as a flounder," Aaron said. "There's no swell, no wind."
"And no ship," I finished. Aaron shook his head.
"Maybe it turned and went back over the horizon while the mist was covering it."
"I guess so. It must have changed course," I said. "Although, to be honest, I could hardly see how. The ship had only been hidden by the mist for a few seconds, half a minute at the most. But I couldn't think of any other possibilities. It must have been what had happened." Aaron glanced at his watch.
"I bet we'll be last in the treasure hunt by now."
I looked across towards the steep steps. "Come on, let's head back anyway. You never know. We might have got far enough ahead with the first few questions that we're still in with a chance.
I pulled the sheet out of my pocket and studied the map. Now we discovered the fifth bay, I could figure out where we were on the island. A tiny squiggly line led from here back to the main road. That would be the one we'd found at the end of the ditch. I prodded the map to show Aaron where we were.
We just have to go back up the steps, then take the path up that way, and we should get back on track.
Okay, let's go. What was the next question again?
I turned the sheet over and read it out. Bring back a stone from Pebble Bay, and we'll know if you cheated, by the way.
Okay, Pebble Bay it is,
Aaron said as he headed back across the plinth to the steps.
Let's see if we can get back in the race.
Needless to say, we didn't win the treasure hunt. Luckily, some of the others had found a few places difficult to find, so we didn't come in last either. We were somewhere around the middle. Good enough not to attract attention, despite coming back looking like extras from a street urchin scene in Oliver Twist. We caught up with the rest of the class at the finish point in the woods. Mandy gave me a wave. She and Julie were sitting with some of the others at the foot of a tree further down the path.
What happened to you? Mandy asked me.
What do you mean? She pointed at my left arm. You've got a massive bruise all down your arm. I twisted my arm to study it. She was right. It was turning bluish purple already, and there was a cut streaking down the centre of the bruise.
And your other arm is bleeding, Mandy added. Plus your legs are covered in mud, and you're limping.
We got a bit lost, I said casually. Then I added in a whisper, I'll tell you more later. Miss Platt was coming up behind us, and I didn't want her to overhear me telling Mandy that we deliberately set off down a path to a bay that we'd been specifically told to keep away from.
Okay, and, you do know you're not wearing any shoes, don't you?
Mandy added.
I nodded. I'll explain that later too.
Right, children. Well done, all of you. Let's head back to the house now, Miss Platt said as she gathered us together. Go and get yourselves cleaned up, and we'll meet in the dining room in 20 minutes. After lunch, you can have some free time, while Lyle and I mark the treasure hunt sheets. Please can I have some volunteers to help prepare the food?
We shuffled quickly across the road and over to the house before Miss Platt volunteered us for kitchen duties.
Did you see that amazing ship?
I asked Mandy as we went to the room we were sharing with some of the other girls.
Which ship?
Mandy asked.
Big tall ship out on the horizon with massive sails. It looked like it was coming this way, but changed course.
Nope. Mandy shook her head.
Sure you didn't imagine it?
She joked, reminding me it wasn't so long ago that she'd bullied me and taunted me and called me names. Those days were gone now, though, weren't they? Mandy must have seen me flinch.
Hey, I'm just teasing, she said more gently.
I was probably on the other side of the island when you saw it.
Yeah, probably, I agreed. But I wasn't too sure. And I decided not to mention the ship again, to Mandy or anyone else. Something about it was niggling at me. What was it? The way it had moved. The way it had seemed to come from nowhere and disappear so suddenly. The sails that at one moment had looked ragged and torn, and the next had filled with air to propel the ship forward. Or all of it. Either way, as I tucked into my crisps and my cheese and pickle sandwich, I forgot about the ship and got back to the things that really mattered, planning what to do with my friends in our free time. It wasn't a difficult decision. The sun was still shining, and Mandy and Aaron agreed with me. Sandy Bay was our free time destination. The first thing we did when we got there was look for our sandals. The tide had come in quite a bit since Aaron and I had been down here earlier, but it was still a long way from the top of the beach. They were exactly where we'd left them. Mandy took her shoes and socks off and put them with ours. Let's go down to the water's edge for a paddle, she suggested.
Then she stopped and looked from Aaron to me. I mean, if that's... if it would make you... if you don't mind...
It's fine, I assured her. We don't sprout tails until we're halfway into the water. Even if we did, it's not a problem.
I pulled up my trouser legs and waved the others on.
Come on, race you to the sea.
We ran down the beach and into the water. Some of our classmates had had the same idea and come down to Sandy Bay too. We joined them, splashing each other and racing along the shore, shrieking as we ran. Then Mandy stopped running and pointed out to sea.
Hey, look, she said.
My heart quickened. Was it the ship again? I looked where she was pointing. It wasn't the ship. It was even better than that. A shoal of dolphins were swimming, diving and zooming through the waves. They were carrying parcels on their backs, and there were people in between the dolphins.
Shiprock School had arrived.
I looked at Mandy. She smiled.
It's fine. Go and meet them. There are plenty of others on the beach, she said, reading my mind in a way that she had never done before, and that only really good friends do.
I smiled back and couldn't help thinking how far we'd come since the days when she'd called me Fish Girl. Without stopping to think, I gave her a hug.
Thanks, Mandy, I said.
She awkwardly hugged me back, then pulled away.
You're soaking me, I laughed. Like you're not already drenched, she shrugged.
True. Then she nodded her head towards the group coming ever closer.
Go on, go and welcome them to the island.
Without thinking about it, I dived into the water and swam out to meet them. Aaron had been playing football with some of the other boys on the beach, but when he saw me turn and dive into the water, he swam out to join me. Shona was right at the front of the group. We practically swam head first into each other.
Emily!
Shona beamed as she pulled me into the biggest hug.
You're early, I said as we swam along. I thought you weren't coming till tonight. We were loaned Neptune's top fleet of dolphins, so we made it in half the time.
Aaron whistled.
Nice! How did you manage that?
At which point, someone else swam up beside Shona.
It helps if you have the right contacts, he said with a grin.
Seth!
Aaron swam over to Seth and slapped him on the back.
How come you're here?
He came up with an ingenious plan, Shona said.
Seth continued.
I persuaded Neptune that something as important as the first joint school outing between merfolk and humans needed someone to supervise it.
Shona smiled at Seth.
Seth made it sound like Neptune's idea.
And Neptune went for it,
Seth finished with a grin.
So here I am, probably just for a couple of days, but it's better than nothing.
Swishy,
I said.
Isn't it?
Shona added shyly. So whereabouts are you staying? I asked Shona.
Mr. Finsplash says it's close to one of the bays. Dark Blue Bay, is it?
Deep Blue Bay,
Aaron suggested.
That's it. There are some tunnels there that have been adapted into a mer hostel.
Cool. That's where Aaron and I went earlier, I said. It's just round this corner. As we passed the rocks at the far edge of Deep Blue Bay, we swam up to the surface to take in the surroundings. It looked different from this morning. Then, the sea had filled the area of the bay, but hadn't come up as high. Now, the water came so far up the cliffs, you couldn't see the orangey red of the low rocks. We thought it was deep earlier. Now it was probably half as deep again. The water had more energy too. It lifted and lowered us as we talked.
It's the deepest bay on the island, Aaron said.
There are 5 bays, but we're only allowed to visit 4 of them, I added.
Not that we took any notice of...
Aaron began. He was interrupted by Mr. Finsplash calling everyone back down to follow him.
We'll catch up with you later, shall we? Shona said. They've told us we're all meeting up in a bit, at the edge of this bay.
Brilliant. See you later, I said,
and Shona and Seth ducked back down under the water. Aaron and I were about to do the same and start heading back to Sandy Bay, when something caught my eye on the cliffs.
or someone.
Aaron, I said.
Look!
Two of the others from our class were standing on the rocks, near to where we'd been earlier. They were perched on a rocky ledge below the path we'd walked along. They looked as if they were in trouble. Aaron stared at the cliff.
That's James and Annabelle. What are they doing?
We swam over to them and called up. Now that the tide was nearly high, we weren't that far away from them, close enough to see their faces. They looked terrified.
Are you okay? I called up.
Annabelle just shook her head without replying. James called back to us.
We're stuck, he said. We walked round the top of the bay earlier, but can't get back now. We didn't realise the tide would come in so quickly.
I glanced across the rocks and saw what he meant. The water had risen so high, the two sides of the bay were now cut off from each other. As the tide inched ever higher, the swell was lifting and dropping us. One second, we were calling them from a long way down. The next, we were virtually slammed up against the cliffside.
"Why don't you jump into the sea?" I suggested. "Or climb down the ladder. We'll swim across the bay with you."
Annabelle violently shook her head.
"No way," she called, finding her voice. "It's way too deep. We saw the chart. I'm not getting in there."
A moment later, the sea itself replied to her fear. A wave rose so high and so violently against the cliff, it was as if it was reaching out to snatch and grab whatever it could for the ocean. Annabelle let out a scream and pressed herself as far against the back of the rocky ledge as she could. Two more waves rose up and lashed at the cliff, each one searching the rocks for debris to steal. The next three were calmer, but still pretty fierce. I vaguely remembered Annabelle's attempts in the pool back in Brightport. She was one of the weaker swimmers. I wasn't surprised she was reluctant to take on the biggest, deepest bay, especially when there were waves like this to contend with. I studied the coastline. She and James weren't too far from where we'd come out of the water this morning. It wouldn't be the easiest thing in the world for us to clamber up the ladder while the swell was this heavy, but I reckoned if we could get out and join them, we could help them back to the path. Aaron looked at me. He was thinking the same thing, I could tell.
"Let's get out and help them,"
he said. I nodded.
"Just stay where you are," I called. "We're coming up."
Aaron and I waited for one of the less ferocious waves to raise us up. Then we grabbed the ladder and climbed out of the water as fast as we could before the next wave slammed us against the side. We held on to the top of the ladder as we waited for our tails to fade away and our legs to reform. Then we scrambled across to join Annabelle and James.
"Thank you so much," Annabelle cried as we reached them and got our breath back from the climb.
I looked round.
"Okay, we just need to climb over a few of these rocks, and the path will be ahead of us."
"I thought the path was that way,"
James said, pointing across the bay.
"This is a different path,"
Aaron explained.
"You don't know it's there till you get over these rocks. Come on, follow us."
Aaron and I took the lead. We clambered over the boulders like expert rock climbers this time. The final one was the toughest, and I reached down to grab Annabelle's hand and help her. Once we were all over the rock, the path opened up ahead of us. Aaron set off along it, and we followed behind him in single file.
"The path gets really narrow in a bit," I said over my shoulder as we walked. "Just stay calm and keep putting one foot in front of the other. You'll be fine."
We walked on silently, till we came to the point where we'd fallen earlier.
"Careful here,"
Aaron called back. A few minutes later, we'd reached the path that led down to the chair. Part of me wanted to go back down there to see it again. The other part wanted to keep it a secret, just for Aaron and me. I couldn't resist a glance as we passed, though. I could see the steep drop down the cliff and the very edge of the plinth. From here, the chair was just out of sight.
Okay, we take this path here,
Aaron said, waiting for the others to catch up. Their faces were white from their cliff-edge walk.
It's inland from here, and a much safer track all the way back to the road.
Thank you so much for doing this, Annabelle said as she started up the path. I was waiting on the corner for them to come past me. I don't know what we'd have done if you hadn't been there.
I don't even want to think about it,
James added. I didn't want to think about it either. With the tide rising and the waves hitting the cliffside like they were, I reckoned another few minutes on that rock and the pair of them would have been in serious trouble. The others had gone ahead of me up the path. I was about to follow them when I heard something below us. It sounded like a splash. I glanced in the direction of the plinth, just in time to see a widening circle of ripples, spreading and growing like when you throw a stone into a lake, only much bigger and wider. Then I saw something even more peculiar. Below the surface of the water, a dark shadow was moving away from the ripples. What was it? A shark? A big fish? And what had caused the splash?
Emily, are you coming?
Aaron called. The three of them had stopped to wait for me. Should I tell them what I'd seen? I looked back down. The shape under the water had disappeared now. The ripples had almost gone. What was there to tell? It was just a fish, and the ripples must have been caused by a loose piece of rock falling from the cliff. I mean, what other explanation was there? Coming, I replied, and headed up the path to join my friends, trying to put my questions about this strange corner of the island to the back of my mind. Chapter 6. We rejoined the road at the top of the path and found our way back to the house. There you are, Miss Platt greeted us at the door. We're meeting out here in 5 minutes. Shiprock School have arrived, and we're all going to Deep Blue Bay to discuss plans for the week. Hurry, hurry! Don't make us late! I ran upstairs, had a quick change, and joined the others a few minutes later. As we walked, I told Aaron about what I'd seen earlier. I'm sure it was a big fish or a shark or something, I said. Just, it looked, well, like a person.
It was probably one of the kids from Shiprock, Aaron said.
Of course. Why hadn't I thought of that? What about the ripples, though? Aaron shrugged.
Whoever it was must have flip-dived into the water or something.
He laughed. What?
Just you. You're determined to find mystery and adventure everywhere you go, aren't you?
I shrugged and folded my arms. No, I said defensively. Aaron laughed again and slipped an arm around my waist.
No need to sulk, he said. I meant it as a compliment. It's one of the things I...
He stopped and coughed.
Sorry, swallowed a fly,
he said, thumping his chest a couple of times. One of the things... I prompted him when he'd got over his coughing fit.
Just, you know, it's why I don't mind hanging out with you,
he said lightly.
You're always good for a laugh.
Good for a laugh? Was that all he thought of me? When I'd been practically picturing us getting married, that put me in my place.
Come on, we're getting behind.
And with that, he sped up and practically marched to the front of the group. Now then, children, please remember we are not only making history this week, we are also here to learn about each other's worlds, Miss Platt began. We were huddled at one end of the bay, sitting on the ground leaning against the boulders that lined the shore. It was the only bit of land that we could sit on. The rest was cut off by the tide now. The Shiprock class was in the sea in front of us. Mr. Finsplash rose a little higher in the water.
Well said, Miss Platt,
he agreed. Please, call me Andrea, Miss Platt said with a tiny blush. Mr. Finsplash smiled at Miss Platt.
Very well. In that case,
You must call me Cal.
Miss Platt returned the smile.
Thank you, Cal. I shall do.
Mandy nudged me.
Get a room, guys, she whispered.
I laughed. Miss Platt shot us a warning look as Mr. Finsplash carried on.
I am in full agreement with Andrea. We are here to learn, to share and to enjoy everything that this splendid island has to offer.
He glanced around.
Now, I believe that a Luella Waters is going to tell us what we are doing next.
Miss Platt stepped forward.
Actually, Luella isn't here. She's... Well, actually, we don't know exactly what's happened to her, but we believe she's been called away. Her husband, Lyle, is looking after us.
Fine. Let's hand over to Lyle, then,
Mr. Finsplash said, looking around again, presumably wondering which one of the children in front of him might possibly be a man called Lyle, who was married to Luella and in charge of today's activities.
Lyle isn't here, Miss Platt said tightly. We looked for him at his house on the way here, but he...
Miss, look!
One of the girls, Evie, was pointing to the other side of the bay, where Lyle was hurrying across to join us.
I'm so sorry to keep you waiting, he said breathlessly as he rushed over.
He looked as if he'd just got out of the shower. Smoothing down his wet hair and half tucking his shirt into his trousers, Lyle gave Mr. Finsplash and the Shiprock kids an awkward wave.
I'm Lyle, he said. Welcome to Five Bays Island.
Mr. Finsplash raised a disapproving eyebrow.
Nice to meet you, he said stiffly.
Right then, we're all here now, Miss Platt said. Shall we get on with the activity then?
Yes, Lyle said. You do have an activity for us?
Miss Platt asked impatiently.
Well, actually, I...
Miss Platt shot a this-is-what-we've-had-to-put-up-with look at Mr. Finsplash, who decided to jump in and save the day, probably to impress Andrea.
I've got an idea, he said brightly. First, let's split into boys and girls.
We all dutifully shuffled into position in our separate groups.
Now, all of you form pairs.
We started shuffling again. I looked for Mandy to see if she wanted to pair up with me.
I hadn't finished,
Mr. Finsplash announced. We stopped shuffling.
One human, one mer in each pair.
That was easy. I sought out Shona in the group in the water. She gave me a nod and a thumbs up. Miss Platt clapped her hands together like she does when one of us comes up with a good answer.
Wonderful idea, she trilled.
Taking over from Mr. Finsplash, she went on.
In your pairs, we'd like each of you to teach the other something about your worlds.
And about the island,
Lyle interjected, glancing at both teachers as if they were in charge, and he was the overkeen student.
And about the island,
Miss Platt agreed.
You'll have to work out how to do this together,
Mr. Finsplash added.
Deal with the limitations you have in exploring each other's worlds, and together find a way to overcome any obstacles.
Lyle looked at his watch.
It's high tide in an hour. How about we meet at Sandy Bay just after that? There won't be much space here for the Brightport students when the tide is fully in.
Perfect, Miss Platt agreed. In your pairs, we want you to tell us what you have learned about each other's worlds, and then tell us something you have discovered together about the island,
Mr. Finsplash concluded.
Any questions?
Tommy put his hand up.
Yeah, miss, are you and Mr. Finsplash going to teach each other about your worlds too?
We all started to laugh, till a look from Miss Platt stopped us. Her eyes were stern, but her pink cheeks gave her away.
Yes, lad, Mr. Finsplash jumped in. That's a very good idea. Right, what are you waiting for? Team up and get going. We'll see you in just over an hour at Sandy Bay.
With that, the two groups shuffled and jostled and awkwardly made introductions. Luckily for Shona and me, our teachers were too interested in getting to know each other to worry about whether it was cheating if we teamed up when we were already best friends. I slid into the water, and Shona and I swam off to gossip, chat, and catch up while the others discussed how to go about their assignment. We got straight down to important matters. "So, are you and Seth officially boyfriend and girlfriend yet?" I asked Shona as we swam off. We stayed above the surface of the water, gently flicking our tails as we meandered out to sea.
"I don't know," she admitted. "He hasn't mentioned it, and nor have I. Maybe we'll figure it out while we're here. You like him, don't you?"
"A good-looking boy who saved the narwhal from certain death is one of Neptune's closest advisers and clearly adores you."
"Let me think," I teased. "You think he's good-looking?"
"Of course. Obviously not as good-looking as Aaron, but, you know, he's okay." Shona laughed and splashed water at me.
"Come on, let's explore," she said, diving under the surface.
I followed her down. I marvelled, as I always did, at the change in life under the water. I'd only been a mermaid for the last year. Or, at least, I'd only known I was a mermaid for that long, so it was all still relatively new to me. The silence of the underwater world, the bright colours, the gentle swaying of the plant life at the bottom of the ocean. We zigzagged through a mini forest of seaweed, bright green tubes with feathery yellow tops, reaching up towards the surface of the sea, jostled against each other, and stretched upwards like a crowd of people all craving a glimpse of the sky. We raced alongside a pair of sleek black fish. They looked like mini skinny sharks, focused and serious. Long-tailed, long-nosed and fast, they seemed to be on a serious mission. They barely flicked their tails as they sped through the water. We let them zoom ahead. We swam past a shoal of tiny black fish, swimming round and round into a spinning circle, constantly on the move, like a gathering ball of wool or a snowball, getting bigger and bigger as it rolls down a hill. Below us, the sandy seabed was broken up with occasional clumps of rocks and weeds. In amongst them, crabs and lobsters lay in wait, like old men sitting outside their houses, watching the world go by and meeting up for games of chess and dominoes.
"Hey, look," I said, pointing ahead.
The clumps of rock seemed to give way to something else. Or rather, they seemed to build into something else. The individual clusters of rock became bigger and bigger, until there was no sand at all, just rocks. The water grew colder as we swam above them.
"Look over there," Shona said, gesturing ahead of us to where the rocks grew even higher and darker.
We swam carefully towards them, weaving in between the jagged tops that reached higher and higher. Some of the peaks almost came to the surface of the water.
"It's like a mountain range," I whispered. "It's incredible," Shona agreed.
As we swam over a particularly high peak, my tail brushed against the rock. It almost scratched me. It was cold, rough. I was about to suggest we forget it and turn back, when I noticed something.
"Shona, it's like a secret path."
On the other side of the peak, the range fell steeply away. It was a sheer drop down, not just from this peak, but all the way along the rocks. Suddenly, the seabed was a long, long way down. The water was clear, blue, warm. I could see the sandy surface way down below us, a thin, winding channel within the rocky mountain range. Shona and I stared along the channel, then turned to gape at each other.
"Okay, I have officially never seen anything like this," Shona admitted.
"You want to explore?" Shona twisted uncomfortably. As she did, her tail glinted and sparkled in the newly clear water.
"I don't know if we should," she began. "I mean, we've been out for quite a while. Maybe we should start heading back.
I dragged Shona into a lot of adventures in the past, and some of them had been pretty life-threatening. I wasn't going to draw her into another one if she wasn't keen. I started to turn round to swim back.
"Okay, you're right," I said. "We probably should be heading."
"No."
Shona stopped me. I don't know if she'd seen the disappointment on my face, or if something about this hidden channel had ignited her curiosity too, but she pulled me back.
"Come on, we might never find it again. Let's just have a quick look. I'm sure we've got time."
So we swam on. The channel narrowed and twisted and turned, like a giant eel snaking along the ocean floor. We followed each curve and bend, marvelling at the huge sheer cliff faces on either side of us as we swam. We passed shoals of tiny white and yellow fish, swimming along in a line like an obedient brood of ducklings behind their mother. Shoals of blue and purple striped fish, wide and round, moving along in perfect formation like a dance troupe. Three sleek blackfish darted through the channel beside us before racing ahead like businessmen hurrying to a meeting. Small nests of seaweed bunched up here and there, green strands with their feathery yellow tops waving us on through the channel as tiny sand clouds puffed up between them. And then something weird happened. Everything stopped. The fish scattered and disappeared round the next bend. The seabed no longer sent up puffs of sand. Even the rock seemed more still. All the motion of the ocean had frozen. And then, I gulped as I stared ahead, too shocked to speak, too enthralled to turn back and grab Shona. Coming around the bend and heading directly towards us was the huge, dark hull of a ship. I tried to turn and swim away, but my tail had forgotten how to work. I couldn't move. The ship was coming right at me, an enormous deep blue hull with some kind of gold figurehead rising up out of the water at the bow. Any second now, it would hit me. What could I do? There was nowhere to escape to, no room in this channel to dive out of its way. I could dive down to the bottom, but to be honest, I didn't really fancy the idea of a massive ship gliding directly over the top of me, which just left one other option. Head upwards. Without pausing for another moment, I spun my tail as hard as I could and propelled myself upwards. If I could get to the surface and out onto the top of the rocky peaks, perhaps I could get out of the ship's way. Everyone knows ships avoid rocks. Panting and gasping, I reached the surface and looked around. The ocean was as calm and still as the channel below. The surface of the sea lay like a blue-tinted mirror, shiny, flat, glass-like. It was eerie, but that wasn't the strangest thing. The strangest thing was the sight ahead of me. The ship. It was the only thing around that showed any sign of movement. Its sails were billowing and then dropping, as if begging for wind, searching for the tiniest bit of breath in the air to propel the ship forward. But there was nothing. No wind to give it power. Aside from its flapping sails, the ship was as still as everything else. Out there in the wide, open sea, it appeared to sit firm on the ocean, motionless. I swam around its sides, looking at it from every angle. The hull was dark blue, with a white line that ran all the way around. The sides fanned out and upwards, the longest bowsprit I'd ever laid eyes on. That's the big wooden pole that sticks out from the front of the ship. I'd never seen one like it. Beneath the pole, an intricate maze of ropes formed a netted hammock. Three huge masts stretched upwards from the deck, sails now flapping uselessly. I'd seen these sails in this ship before, from the chair on the edge of the cliff. Surely it couldn't be. I wasn't 100% certain, but it was so similar, and you didn't often see tall ships like this. It had to be the same one. Up close, I could see the figurehead below the bowsprit. The top of a woman's face and torso, with long hair stretching the length of her body. Her bottom half was a tail. I would have said the figurehead was a mermaid, except that the tip of her tail opened out into a jagged-edged fan, with swirling patterns and fire snaking along the hull below it. Part mermaid, part dragon. Freaky, whatever it was. I swam carefully alongside the hull. There were letters at the bow. I read them as I swam by. Prosperous 2, the ship's name. I swam towards the stern, the back end of the ship. Swimming away from the ship, so I could see higher, I craned my neck and looked up. A wide, flat, wooden deck looked polished to perfection. From the water, I could only see the edges of it, but it looked almost brand new. And then, as I scanned my eyes across the planks, they seemed to come to life. Either I was seeing a weird optical illusion from the sunlight that was shining on the water and sending sparkles across the deck, or there was some kind of disco going on up there. And there was something else. People. A man was sitting on a bench near the stern. A woman was twirling round the edges of the dance floor. Another group of people stood by the rails, looking through binoculars and pointing out to sea. Who were these people? Where had they come from? And why were they so silent? "Hey!" I yelled. No one responded. No one even turned round. Maybe they were too busy having fun. I looked around. Where was Shona? What the heck was going on here? An unpleasant cold feeling snaked through my body from my head to the tip of my tail. I suddenly felt too alone out here with this. I dived back under the water and back down into the channel. "Shona!" I called. Nothing. Where was she? The hull of the ship was still there, still dark, still huge. I swam towards it. "Shona?" I called again, less certainly. I moved on alongside the ship, heading back towards the bow and to where I'd last seen Shona. A line of large portholes was dotted all the way along the hull. As I passed them, I glanced inside. Each one gave into a tiny cabin. They were all empty, until I came to one about halfway along. I swam towards it and glanced in, expecting to see the same dark emptiness inside. What I saw this time made me leap back so hard I hit my head against a rock. A woman. As I peeped in, she swam right up to the porthole and started banging her hand against the glass. Her hair was long and red, straggly and messy. Her eyes were green and wide open. Her fists pumped against the window. Who was she? Was she real? A ghost? A mermaid? What? The woman banged harder against the glass. Her fists didn't make any sound at all, but the urgency of her movements was matched by the expression on her face. She needed help. What could I do? Her lips were desperately mouthing something, but I couldn't make out the words clearly. It looked like she was saying, "All my weather," or "I'm a winner." What could it mean? I shook my head as I stared. "I don't know what you're saying," I shouted to her. She called something back that looked like, "Happy, happy." But surely she couldn't be saying that. The very last thing she looked was happy. She carried on repeating the same thing, her mouth forming the words more and more urgently each time. And then I realized what she was saying over and over again. It wasn't "happy, happy." It was "help us. Help us!" I stared at the woman, powerless and panicked. How could I help them? Who were they? Where had they come from? All I had were questions. I stared back at her, my own face reflected in the glass of the porthole beside hers. I looked almost as panicked as she did. As I watched, something started to change. The water was moving again. Something was brushing past me. Feathery, long hair covering my face, getting in my eyes. I pulled it away, but it kept on coming. Then it was on my body, my tail. An arm grabbed me around my waist, pulling me down, snatching me away. Cold fingers stabbed me in the side. No! Please! No! I shut my eyes and screamed. The hands were still on me, grabbing my elbow, shaking me.
Emily!
I kept my eyes screwed as tightly closed as I could. I wasn't going to look. I didn't want to see it. A sea monster, a servant of Neptune sent to kidnap me. I'd been through that before. I couldn't face it happening again.
Emily!
Wait, I knew that voice. I opened my eyes. When I did, I saw three things. They registered slowly, one by one, as my brain took each of them in. Thing one, the person who had called my name was Shona. Thing two, the hands and monsters grabbing at me were, in fact, long trails of seaweed that I'd somehow got caught up in. Thing three, the enormous, mysterious, non-moving ship that a moment ago had practically filled the entire valley had gone. Chapter 7.
What? Where is it? I stammered. Where's what? Shona replied. Em, are you okay?
I looked at her. Am I okay? I echoed numbly.
You're shaking.
I held out an arm. Shona was right. My hand was wobbling like a jellyfish.
The ship, I said. Where's it gone?
Shona stared at me.
What ship?
I laughed, out of nerves maybe.
The huge, great, massive ship that was right here.
Shona shook her head.
I honestly don't know what you're talking about. I've been here the whole time, and there hasn't been any ship in sight, I can tell you.
I took a second, tried to calm myself down.
In fact, I was actually going to ask what had happened to you,
Shona went on.
What do you mean? Just, well, you went a bit funny.
Funny? Shona shrugged.
Yeah, like, you were here, but kind of weren't at the same time. You were swimming along as though you were looking at something, she said. You darted up to the surface, so I followed you. I was behind you, but you were facing away from me the whole time, just staring. I called you, but it was like you didn't even hear me.
You followed me up?
Yes, and I...
Then you must have seen the ship, I insisted. I jabbed my finger at the empty space in front of us.
It was right there! The only thing you could see for miles around. An enormous thing with three masts and ragged sails and...
I stopped. Shona was looking at me with an expression on her face that seemed to say, I really think this person could do with some help, but I'm not professionally qualified to provide it. I stopped trying to explain. What was the point?
You didn't see the ship, I said flatly. There was no ship, Shona insisted.
I nodded, resigned to the weirdness. I mean, it had to happen at some point, didn't it? After everything I'd been through in the last year, it was only ever going to be a matter of time before I started losing it completely. Then Shona said more gently,
At least I didn't see a ship. But maybe I missed it. I guess I could have been looking the other way.
I laughed. It wasn't exactly the kind of thing you could have missed.
Look, I said, just tell me this. You're my best friend, right? Of course I am.
And you trust me?
With my life.
So, okay, I know it doesn't make sense, but believe me, please, there was a ship. It was right here. I saw it with my own eyes. I know it doesn't make sense, and I have no idea how come you didn't see it. But I swear that I did.
Shona held my gaze for a moment. I believe you, she said. You're right. It doesn't make sense. It isn't really possible. But I know you wouldn't make something like that up. You never have done before, and I can tell you've seen something weird by how shaky you are. I promise I didn't see anything, but I do believe that you did.
I smiled a wobbly smile at her.
Thank you, I said.
Okay, so I might be completely cracking up, but at least I had Shona to catch the pieces. And then I realized who else I had. Aaron. He saw the ship too, at least. He did see it, didn't he? He hadn't just pretended to see it to keep me happy. I had to know. I started swimming back the way we'd come.
Let's get to Sandy Bay, I said.
We'll be the last ones there at this rate. As we swam, one thought propelled me forward. Aaron is the only one who can tell me I'm not going completely crazy.
Well done, children. You've all done a great job.
Miss Platt was sitting on the sand at the water's edge, smiling round at us. I wondered if her super bright smile had anything to do with her special getting-to-know-you time with Mr. Finsplash. The Brightport children were sitting on the sand too. The Shiprock Mer children were mostly lying in the shallows at the water's edge, leaning on their elbows and flapping their tails in the waves. I'd got out of the water when we'd arrived, and my tail had fizzled away as my legs had reappeared. Now I sat nervously on the sand, my toes on the edge of the soft waves that brushed my feet.
"Who'd like to tell us about what they learned on this assignment?" Miss Platt asked.
One of the Shiprock girls put her hand up. Mr. Finsplash nodded at her.
"Thank you, Izella. Who did you pair up with?"
"Brooke," she replied.
"Excellent. Why don't you both start us off?" Miss Platt said with a smile. "Tell us what you learned about each other's worlds and about Five Bays Island."
I half listened as each group recounted what they'd learned, and I smiled gratefully when it was our turn and Shona piped up with how we'd discovered a variety of seaweed that she had never encountered before. But I was only half there. The other half of me couldn't stop thinking about the ship. Aaron was sitting beside me. As we'd expected, Shona and I had been the last pair back, so I hadn't had a chance to talk to him yet. Mandy was sitting on my other side.
"Well, we're very pleased with your first joint assignment. I think it's going to be a swishy week," Mr. Finsplash said when all the pairs had reported back. "Now, it's getting late, so we'll break for dinner. But just before that, Mr. Waters is going to tell you a bit about what we'll be doing tomorrow."
Lyle cleared his throat.
"Do call me Lyle," he said.
Mr. Finsplash gave him a curt nod.
"Lyle, then," he said awkwardly. "Listen up, all of you, and Lyle will tell us what's in store for us next."
Lyle pulled a piece of paper out of his pocket and unfolded it.
"So tomorrow's task, let's see now. Tomorrow is Monday,"
he muttered as he looked down the page.
"Great," Mandy muttered. "He hasn't even bothered to prepare."
"Aw, here we are. Right, tomorrow is..."
Lyle stopped, cleared his throat, glanced up at us all, and opened his mouth like a fish silently trying to get oxygen. His face had turned grey. He swallowed hard before looking back down at the piece of paper.
"What is his problem?" Mandy whispered in my ear.
I shrugged.
"I have no idea. Maybe he can't read," I whispered back.
"Or maybe he needs glasses," Mandy offered. Lyle was talking again.
"Sorry," he said. "As I was saying, tomorrow's activity is..."
He paused again.
It's called Shallows and Shipwrecks."
Something cold grabbed my middle.
The island is, as you know, surrounded by reefs and rocks, and is in one of the most beautiful and varied parts of the ocean."
Lyle went on. His voice sounded mechanical, a bit like a recording made by a machine rather than an actual person talking. It was flat,